This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents Stealing Sorcery, The War of Broken Mirrors, Book 2, written by Andrew Rowe, performed by Nick Podell. Prologue. Jonan, Heartlance. The evening chill was Jonan's only company as he traversed the unfamiliar streets of Velthrin. The map burned into his memories had proven accurate thus far, but uncertainty always weighed heavily on his shoulders during clandestine operations. He had arrived in the city only hours before, but his orders had insisted upon haste. Upon reaching the gates, he had briefly considered delaying his report until after he had slept for a few hours, but Symphony would have discovered his lapse. She always did. Upon catching sight of his destination, the sorcerer retreated into a nearby alley, pressing two fingers from his left hand to his forehead in the Valerian sign for safety. Among the Thorn Guard and their allies, it was used as a signal meaning, "I am safe," or "I can be trusted." To an outsider, he would have immediately vanished from sight, although he retained the ability to perceive his own body. The gesture was a nervous habit. He had long ago learned to hide his image without strictly needing to resort to gestures or words. His vision was already poor, so he barely noticed when the spell extracted its cost. Sight sorcery was among the least obtrusive forms of sorcery. Vision was a small price to pay for the freedom that his skills provided. With his spell in effect, Jonan moved toward the building, a towering three-story housing complex with the dubious distinction of standing next to the local Perfect Stranger Tavern. Such establishments were frequently used as fronts for the Thieves Guild of Valeria, an organization with deep ties to his own. Arranging for a room there would have been easy given his connections, but he disliked the idea of finding housing so close to his rendezvous point. His contact could most likely discover where he stayed regardless of the location, but he liked to have at least some pretense of security. Invisibly opening doors often attracted undue attention, so Jonan chose the more awkward route of making his ascent via a series of stairs on the outside of the building designed to be a fire escape. At the top of the final stairway was a ladder that led the rest of the way to the roof. Gripping the rungs while holding his staff proved difficult, but after a few moments of awkwardness, he approached the roof. A figure enshrouded in shimmering cloth loomed over him from above, reaching down with a hand. Her body had feminine curves, but any details were washed away by the voluminous sashes that draped her form. Jonan grit his teeth and accepted the hand. He was pulled to the roof in a disorienting instant, after which he took a breath and steadied himself, planting his staff on the flat stone rooftop.
"Loyalty is like a crystal sword," came a feminine voice from within the layers of fabric.
"Sharp and beautiful, but easily shattered," Jonan finished the phrase as he had been instructed. He barely managed to restrain himself from rolling his eyes. Ayara's methods were effective, but often bordered on the theatrical.
"Not bad," the enshrouded figure mused. "I can't see you at all. What do they call you? Stealth, maybe?"
He scratched his head, giving a sheepish grin, only realizing a moment later that she wouldn't be able to see it. "The scribe, actually." With a thought, he let his invisibility fade. Maintaining the spell wasn't particularly taxing, but now that he had reached his destination, he didn't see any point to it. "Your silk, I take it?"
"No," came a deep voice, echoing from behind him. "I am."
Jonan spun, finding nothing behind him. And then the figure gave an unladylike snort of amusement.
"I've always wanted to do that. You should have seen your face."
Jonan sighed, turning back around. "Sound sorcery? I suppose I should have expected that." Silk gave a melodious laugh that echoed much like her false voice had.
"Maybe, but it was more fun for me this way. I haven't had a partner to practice with for months."
He frowned. "I'm afraid I'm just here for a delivery." Silk folded her arms and tilted her head to the side.
"A delivery? And no new orders then?"
Jonan shook his head.
"No, but I've been told I can make use of you if I need to.
Make use of me? There was a hint of amusement in her voice.
I suppose there might be some entertainment after all. So what kind of present did you bring me?
Jonan extended his hand, holding the quarterstaff. There was no longer any sight sorcery concealing the weapon within. Instead, an actual branch had been hollowed out, and the metallic core was concealed inside and held in place with an adhesive. Someone holding it might notice the staff's unusual weight, but the camouflage worked well against a casual glance, at least. Silk tilted her head to the side, dubiously for a moment, then snatched the staff out of his hands.
Oh,
she mumbled, turning the weapon over in her hands.
This will do.
That's a bit of an understatement.
What will you do with it?
That, she replied.
You'll find out very, very soon.
Chapter 1 Velis 1 Just a Small Favor. Velis Jaldin strode through the halls of the Citadel of Blades with her back straight and her head held high. She had long ago learned to conceal her anxiety behind layers of outward walls. In this case, professionalism was her first line of defense.
You sure you want to do this?
Landon was walking in pace with her, a couple steps to her right. His incessant worrying over her was endearing at times, irritating at others. This was one of the latter cases, but she wouldn't let that show. There could be no cracks in her mask when so much was at stake. She glanced at him, beaming a smile in his direction.
No worries, Lan. It's just Lydia.
Her companion twisted his lips.
Right. Just Lydia.
Velis chuckled as she continued to walk.
Poor Lan. Still swooning over sorceresses. He never changes.
The Citadel of Blades was the central structure for the Keldrian Crossing Holy Grounds, a parcel of land that had been owned by the priesthood of Teos for centuries. As the priesthood expanded and developed a military branch, the Paladins of Teos, the Holy Grounds, had shifted from its initial purpose as a center of worship into a permanent military base. The Citadel of Blades itself was now one part temple, one part fortress, and about five parts administrative center. Ringed with dozens of other buildings, the Citadel housed the offices of most of the officers of the Paladins of Teos. The newly promoted Major Lydia Hastings among them. It had been 8 months since Lydia had discredited Adon, the leader of the supposed gods of the city of Orlan. 8 months since Prince Byron had been crowned King of Orlan. And 8 months since Velis and Landon had been relieved from the Queen's Guard. Normally, she would have expected to transition directly into being a member of the new Kingsguard, but Byron did not trust that anyone who had served his mother would be loyal to him above her. Frankly, he had probably been right. It had been Landon's idea to chase Lydia's skirt all the way back to her home in Velthrin. She had rolled her eyes at the idea outwardly, but she had agreed, not just to support her friend, but also because she had business of her own to pursue in Velthrin, business that was long overdue. They had arrived in Velthrin just under 6 months ago and immediately met with Lydia to discuss the possibility of joining the Paladins of Teos. She pushed the errant thought from her mind, arriving at Lydia's door. She didn't know the Paladin particularly well, but they had met a few times in Orlan and several more since coming to Velthrin. It had, of course, been Landon's idea to offer to join the Paladins of Teos. Velis thought they were hideously overqualified to sign up as fresh recruits, but fortunately, the Paladins apparently had plenty of other applicants with prior experience as soldiers, mercenaries, and even members of other military orders. People like Landon and herself were given the option to participate in an accelerated training program, culminating in a series of proficiency tests to see if they were a match for any of the 7 suborders. The training had been tedious, but relatively easy by her standards. The hardest parts were the history lessons. They were boring and completely impractical as far as she was concerned. The combat training, on the other hand? Now that was fun. Velis glanced over at Landon, who just shrugged unhelpfully at her and knocked on Lydia's door. The exasperated sigh that came from the other side was loud enough that she could have heard it easily, even without her own particular talents.
"Come in!"
Velis turned the knob, giving one last look to her brown-haired companion, who leaned up against a nearby wall. He was trying to look natural. It was half surprising that he had even accompanied her this far, given his reservations about her plan. Velis opened the door, stepped in, and closed the door behind her. Afterward, she turned to see Lydia sitting at a desk stacked with an implausible number of papers. The paladin leaned against her left hand, rubbing her temple. Her right hand rested on the table, her fingers blackened with ink and grasped around a quill. The former Queen's Guard wasn't wearing a sword, so she simply raised her right hand to her chest as a salute. Lydia sat up a little straighter, abandoning her quill to mirror the gesture.
"At ease, Velis. What can I help you with?"
Velis relaxed her stance a bit, taking a moment to look Lydia over. Several errant threads of crimson hair had slipped out of Lydia's traditional bun, and her spectacles served to magnify the bags under her eyes. Nevertheless, her uniform was immaculate.
"Was hoping you could do me a favor. You got a few?"
Lydia nodded sleepily, standing and retrieving a rag from a nearby shelf. She wrapped the rag around her ink-stained hand, and the black liquid seeping into the cloth reminded Velis of binding a wound.
"I could use a break from all this paperwork. Apparently coming home a hero makes you uniquely qualified to be a secretary. Who knew?"
Velis frowned in something she hoped resembled sympathy.
"Sorry, Lydia. Anything I can help with?"
She didn't want to help Lydia with anything, but she was also pretty sure Lydia wouldn't agree.
"Actually, shit. Platitude gamble failed. I saw something on your application about sorcery resistance. That's intriguing. What did you mean?" "Oh, that. Got a knack for shaking off anything that tries to get into my head. Always had it, far as I can tell. My aunt figured it out when she was trying to teach me something. Had me try it with a bunch of people."
Lydia finished wiping off her hand, setting the blackened cloth down on a far corner of the table.
"I'd like to see that. Oh, well, that's not so bad."
She never minded a good chance to show off.
"Okay, Red, hit me with whatever you've got." "You'd better sit down first."
Lydia pointed to a chair on the side of the desk near the entrance. She had a mischievous glint in her eyes, which Velis had to admit was kind of cute.
Maybe Landon's taste isn't complete rash after all.
Velis sat down, folding her arms behind her head.
"What's on the bombardment agenda?"
Lydia sauntered up to her, put a finger on her bicep, and said,
"Sleep."
Velis's eyes closed. Purple threads appeared in her mind, spreading through the veins at the point of contact in her arm to spread throughout her body. Velis felt a momentary chill as she pulled on the threads with her mind, siphoning them away from her arm and into a central point in her right hand.
"Expel."
She silently commanded the threads, envisioning them surging out her fingertips into the empty air. The chill faded, and Velis opened her eyes, grinning.
"Gotta do better than that, Red, unless your spell was meant to knock me out for about 10 seconds.
Lydia frowned, shaking her head.
"I'm afraid you've been asleep for several hours, Velis."
Velis blinked, opening her mouth and then closing it again as words failed to emerge. The faintest hint of a smile crept its way to Lydia's lips. The former Queen's Guard narrowed her eyes at Lydia and then burst out laughing.
"Okay, that was pretty good. You actually had me there for a second, and I'll tell you, that's not easy to do." "I know, it was a rare opportunity, so I had to take it. Your ability is extraordinary. How did you do that?"
Velis scoffed.
"After you pulled that little trick on me? Forget it. You can keep guessing. It's a trade secret."
The paladin rolled her eyes.
"Fine. I'll figure it out one way or another. Now, what brings you to my secluded cavern?" "Oh, that. Put my preferred team on my application, which, given that you just grilled me about my talents, you've already read."
Lydia nodded, leaning back against her desk, a hint of exhaustion returning to her expression.
"Yeah. You want me to make sure you're placed with your friends, I take it?"
Velis nodded.
"Easy enough. Anything else?" "Really? That's it?" "Was expecting you to require convincing."
The paladin shrugged.
It's hardly a surprising request. Anyone with connections is going to try to utilize them. I'm a Cytiran. Pre-planning for your success is something I encourage. Besides that, it's not like there are many local candidates this year. Putting you with two other heavy melee fighters makes perfect sense. Although I was somewhat tempted to pair you and Landon with Keldon Andis. That guy? He's all flash. Granted, he's got a lot of flash, but you take his trick away and there's no substance beneath.
Lydia raised an eyebrow.
I have it on good authority he was an accomplished swordsman even before he earned his gifts. But if you've got that strong of an opinion about him, maybe I should put him on your team. You might both learn a few things from each other.
You're kidding! What am I going to learn from him? Arrogance and condescension? I'd rather take those lessons from Solaris. At least he can back it up.
Fine, fine. But you're going to have to train with some people outside of your own little circle. The three of you will be slotted into a larger platoon, and I don't expect you to ignore the rest of the platoon in favor of each other. From what I hear, some of the foreign candidates might even be a match for you or Landon in a duel.
Velas smirked.
Good. Give me the best of them. Unless we're fighting the other platoons, in which case, give me some raw material to work with. I could use a challenge.
Don't worry, Velas. We'll make sure you're more than adequately challenged.
If you're putting me on a team with Lan and Solaris, I sincerely doubt that. Unless these other applicants are legendary heroes and demigods, I'll wager we're going to come out on top.
Velas felt the knock before she heard it. She deliberately slowed her reaction. Turning too fast could be startling to others. The door swung open before Lydia even had a chance to respond. A younger paladin was standing at the entrance, his forehead drenched with sweat, his breath ragged. He barely managed to raise his hand into a salute before beginning to speak.
Major Hastings, please, come with me. There's been an incident.
An incident? What the rush does that mean?
What happened? Lydia stood up straight, adjusting her sword belt.
Alstheus, there's been an assassination attempt.
Lydia pushed past Velas and broke into a run. Chapter 2 Lydia 1 A Taste of Poison. Lydia shoved her way through the heavy doors to House Theus's manor, racing down the halls toward the fevered sounds of Aladir's incantations.
Let Lysaria's light live within your body, and let the spark of her love...
Gods and monsters, he's casting a spark of life. The victim must be...
Her steps carried her faster, ignoring the startled looks of servants and the numerous signs of wealth that lined the building's floors and walls.
Renew you, and let your heart beat once again!
A flash of green illuminated a distant hall, and Aladir's voice rose again.
Let Glissari's light live within your body!
Lydia came into view of her companion, sitting with a corpse laid across his lap, a pool of blood beneath the pair. Not all of it belonged to the victim.
Aladir, stop!
Lydia commanded, only noticing the other figures standing nearby a moment later. The two women watching over Aladir were similar in visage, albeit separated by many years, but their demeanor could not have been more distinct. The elder woman had been shattered by panic and anguish, her makeup smeared by freely flowing tears. In another circumstance, she might have been quite beautiful. In this, her image was that of grief itself. The younger stared downward at Aladir and the deceased man with a hawkish glare, scrutinizing with a mixture of inquisitiveness and anger.
And let the spark of her love...
Lydia ignored both of the women, grabbing Aladir's hand and pulling it away from the dead man's torso. Aladir raised his head, seeming to notice Lydia for the first time. The Rethri's once brilliant green eyes were the dullest she had ever seen them, and a stream of blood ran from his nose down his chin.
Aladir, you need to stop. It's too late for him, and you're going to kill yourself if you continue.
She wiped a line of blood out from under his nose, showing it to the Rethri to emphasize her point.
The healer will stop when I tell him to.
The tear-stained woman hugged herself, shivering as she spoke.
If he dies, at least it will even the scales.
The younger woman, just a teenager, Lydia realized at a second glance, turned to the elder, folding her arms.
I told you it was too late, Mother. Putting another grave beside Kay's will not comfort his spirit.
The mother took a step closer to her daughter, raising her hand. and then her eyes narrowed as she spun on her heels, retreating from the room. Left alone with Lydia and Aladir, the younger girl knelt down, putting a hand on the victim's forehead.
"Kay was always fragile,"
the girl explained, moving her fingers to close the deceased man's eyes.
"Father sheltered him, pampered him, as the eldest and the boy. He was the only heir."
The girl moved her fingers to the man's hair, straightening it with careful motions. She moved her gaze upward to Lydia.
"He will be furious when he returns. You are the other paladin, yes?"
Lydia nodded.
"My name is Nakane Theus. My brother was fragile, yes, but not fatally so. He seemed so happy this morning. He just wanted a breath of fresh air. And then when he pricked his finger on that thorn, no, a single wound would not kill a man. Not even poor Kay."
"I tried to save him,"
Aladir muttered, his voice weak.
"I tried everything."
"Your everything, it would seem, was insufficient," Nakane replied. "But you can still be useful. You both can, in fact."
"You think your brother was murdered?"
Lydia surmised, glancing around the room. Nakane tilted her head down, giving Lydia a cold look.
"Oh, I am certain my brother was murdered. The only questions are who and how. Not why. I suppose there are some obvious potential motives. The man was Edric Theus' son, after all."
Edric Theus was among the most famous sorcerers on the continent, and one of the few publicly known for having found a method to extend his life. He was certain to have many enemies, both among the inherently long-lived Rethri, who might fear a human with a lifespan comparable to their own, and other scholars that were envious of his discoveries. Lydia stood up.
"I'm going to look around. Aladir, can you stand up and come with me?"
The man nodded weakly, pausing for a moment to set the body gently on the ground.
"May Lysari guide your spirit to its rest,"
the Rethri muttered, bringing a blood-stained fist to his heart.
"May Lysari guide your spirit to its rest,"
Lydia echoed, closing her eyes. When she opened them, she found Aladir and Nakane standing, both looking at her expectantly.
"You should wait with your brother,"
Lydia instructed the young woman, who quirked an eyebrow in reply.
"Why? He's dead. He's not going to get any less comfortable." "I just thought it would be respectful,"
the younger woman shook her head at Lydia.
"I don't think you fully comprehend the situation. When my father hears of this, someone, possibly several someones, are going to find their heads separated from their bodies. Unless, of course, we find and deal with the culprit before he returns."
She folded her hands together in front of her.
"Surely, as an agent of justice, you would rather handle this matter expediently and cleanly."
"That's a strange way to react to the death of your brother, but I suppose she's not wrong. If my brother died..."
She shook her head, dismissing the thought before it could progress any further.
"All right, fine. First, can you give me any more details on what happened? When your servant arrived at the Citadel, all he said was to come quickly because your brother had been badly injured."
Nakane disentangled her hands, raising one of them to her chin.
"Well, Kay had just gotten out of bed, and he was in such a golden mood. Normally we would have spent much of the day reading, but it was lovely outside. He wanted to feel the dawnfire's rays on his skin."
The young woman paused, sealing her eyes shut.
"I'm not giving you anything useful." She took a deep breath. "He pricked his finger on a plant. We should start there." "Just a moment. Before we do that,"
Lydia leaned down, putting a hand against the dead man's skin.
"Dominion of knowledge, I invoke you.
Dominion of life, dominion of poison, dominion of water, dominion of protection."
The words that appeared in her mind were unsurprising, but she grit her teeth nonetheless. Poison. Aladir's attempts at using life sorcery would have been useless. In fact, depending on the type of poison, they may have expedited the victim's death by spreading the poison faster. Water sorcery was better for treating poison, but if that had been Aladir's work, it hadn't been strong enough to neutralize the toxin. Lydia decided to omit telling Aladir that the life spells may have worsened the victim's situation. The Rethri paladin was undoubtedly suffering enough. She could reveal that information later if necessary.
"What are you seeing?"
Aladir tilted his head downward, brushing an errant lock of hair out of his eyes. jarred out of her introspection. Lydia hesitated for a moment before answering.
Evidence of the healing attempts. He also has an aura of protection sorcery.
Nakane pointed to the ring on her brother's hand.
His signet. Father makes them for us. They protect against physical attacks and direct sorceress attacks.
Lydia nodded.
It probably works similarly to my shield spells, then. That would imply the poison was administered through something the ring wouldn't stop. Ingesting food, perhaps? Or contact with an everyday object coated with a toxin?
The female paladin stood, glancing around the room.
Dominion of knowledge! Illuminate your sources!
Green auras manifested around Aladir and Nakane. Neither was surprising. She had known Aladir's sorceress capabilities, and a daughter of House Theus being a sorcerer was hardly unexpected. The glowing trail across the room's white-tiled floor was somewhat startling, however. She reached up to adjust her glasses, deliberately extending the spell beyond the moment it normally lasted. Inspecting the boy, Lydia noted a light glow around the ring Nakane had mentioned. There was no evidence of other enchanted items on his person. She looked away, turning her gaze back to the sorceress path.
There's something odd here.
Lydia could not detect the form of sorcery in the glowing path she saw without casting another spell, but it was intense enough that she could discern the direction that it led.
An aura of sorcery that does not belong. We can investigate the flower you mentioned in a moment, Nakane, but I need to follow this.
Lydia moved toward the source of the aura, and as she drew closer, she was able to distinguish more detail. The path consisted of glowing footprints with additional splotches of green like droplets of paint falling beside them. She knelt down for a moment, hearing Aladir and Nakane following quietly behind her. She measured the size of the footprint, more accurately, a boot print, she realized, and decided it belonged to a large man. A backward glance showed that both Aladir and the corpse of Kay Theus were wearing shoes. Probably not their trails, then. Sorceress auras normally faded quickly. She had never seen footprints leave a mark of this kind. The level of power it would have taken to mark the floor with every step was staggering, and she briefly debated methods by which it could be accomplished.
Deliberately dipping one's boots in dominion essence doesn't sound like a very likely tactic, but I don't like the idea of something powerful enough to leave this kind of trail on its own.
The trail led in two directions, and she followed it first to the left. The path led up a circular stairway draped with red carpet and past a series of paintings, one of which seemed to depict a younger version of the murder victim, a bright smile on his pale face. They arrived at a closed door shortly thereafter.
My brother's bedroom,
Nakane explained.
What are we doing here? I'm following a trail of sorceress energy that is visible to me,
Lydia explained, only realizing in that moment that she had failed to provide the others with any information. Aladir slumped against a wall, using a sleeve to brush blood off his face, and Lydia gave him a concerned look.
I'll be fine, he insisted. Find the bastard that did this.
Lydia nodded, opening the door to the room. The bedroom was surprisingly plain for the residence of the heir to a famous noble house.
A moderate-sized bed with immaculate covers. There's a small desk near the wall with a glass of water on it, half-consumed. Opposite the bed there's a bookshelf and a table. At the table, a chair tucked in.
The room's large window was open, and the light that streamed inside somewhat obscured the glow from the trail. After a moment, she discerned that there were footsteps leading to two places, the bedside table and the open window. And the liquid in the cup next to the bed was glowing.
Touching the cup should be sufficient for this, given the strength of the aura.
Lydia moved beside the bed, touched the glass, and incanted again.
Dominion of knowledge, I invoke you.
Dominion of poison.
She winced, in spite of the words providing exactly what she had anticipated. She turned to the others, noticing that her concentration had failed as she processed the latest spell, and the trail faded from her view.
There's poison in the water.
Lydia raised a hand to indicate a glass. Nakane let out a low hiss.
Poison is a coward's tool. Exactly the sort of thing Hardigan would use.
Hardigan. Blake Hardigan. Edric Theus's rival. The pair argued sorceress theory and philosophy in every possible format. Letters, books, and even public gatherings. While Theus was primarily famous for defensive sorcery, Hartigan was the city's foremost expert on flame sorcery, one of the deadliest dominions for attack spells. Like Edric, Hartigan was one of the few sorcerers who had discovered a method of prolonging his lifespan. Aside from flame sorcery, Hartigan was well respected for his mastery of alchemy, and it was broadly speculated that he had discovered some sort of potion or elixir to stop his aging process. Alchemy, of course, was also famous for producing deadly poisons.
"Hartigan hasn't been in the city for years,"
Aladir offered, breaking into a fit of coughing a moment later.
"You think that he couldn't hire a travel sorcerer to move him from place to place? Please, Aladir, don't be foolish."
Nakane waved a hand at the Rethri dismissively. Her expression softened a moment later, even as she folded her arms across her chest.
"You should stop following us. You're clearly too weak to continue."
Aladir raised a hand in a gesture for them to wait, finishing his fit of coughing before he spoke again.
"Doesn't matter. Kay was my friend."
"That's news to me. I didn't realize they knew each other, although I suppose it shouldn't be that surprising. Edric himself is a life sorcerer, and Aladir is the best of our generation. Maybe Aladir was one of Edric's students."
Lydia rubbed her temples in frustration. Murder was never an easy thing to trace, especially when sorcery was involved. As potent as her information-gathering spells were, a competent enemy sorcerer often had concealment abilities that were on par or superior to them. She had spells designed to counter nearly every type of direct obfuscation, but certain types of sorcery could inhibit an investigation without involving direct concealment. Levitation spells, for example, were an easy way to hide tracks, and they left too small of a trace for her own spells to discern.
"We can speculate about the culprit later. There's still a trail to follow, and it's fading. I need to gather as much information as I can before that happens."
Nakane nodded in agreement.
"Proceed, Paladin." "She could call me by my name, except that I never offered it." "It's Lydia, by the way. Lydia Hastings," she added awkwardly. "May Lissari give your family comfort." "Yes. Now, go ahead with the detection spell."
Lydia turned back toward the window, and then repeated the spell that had detected the trail.
"Dominion of knowledge, illuminate your sources."
The footprints reappeared, leading out the window. She moved to the window, looked outward, and discovered a sheer three-story fall to the ground below. The glow of additional footprints was faintly visible outdoors.
"We're going to follow the path the other way,"
Lydia declared, turning to move along the trail in the opposite direction. She continued after reaching the point where they had started, tracing the footsteps as they headed to another door, which led outside.
"He pricked his finger not far from here,"
Nakane's voice was quiet, barely above a whisper.
"And then he collapsed in the fountain."
"Show me."
Nakane led Lydia to, and then past, a large series of hedges. They might have been at the entrance to a maze, but Nakane did not lead her inside. Instead, she took the paladin to a simple rose bush, pointing at a spot where a drop of blood highlighted one of the thorns.
"No additional sorcery here," Lydia explained. "The thorn was not the cause."
Nakane nodded somberly.
"The glow. Is it over here?"
Lydia shook her head.
"No, it was back near the door." "Let's head back that way then."
They returned to the doorway and then followed the path further, finding that it led around the side of the house and intersected with the path that led out from the window. The footsteps were going opposite directions, meaning that whoever had infiltrated the house had done so through the path they were following, and then retreated through Kay's window and returned to their starting point.
"The path they chose was hardly concealed," Lydia realized. "They had to have opened a door, crossed several well-traveled rooms, gone up a flight of stairs, and opened Kay's door, all without being noticed. Could the assailant have had access to some sort of invisibility spell, like what Jonan uses?"
She briefly considered the possibility that Jonan was the killer, but that was ridiculous. He wasn't even in the city, and he had no motive. The path moved deeper into the grounds outside House Theus, leading into a large forested area. The trees were thick enough that she could barely see any buildings in the distance. For the first time, Lydia felt a pang of concern that they might actually stumble upon the killer. It had been well over an hour since the attack, but it was plausible that the assailant was still nearby. Lydia shifted her belt to allow for an easy draw of her saber. Her own protective sorcery was already in place, but she paused to extend a hand to Aladir. When he accepted her hand, she spoke familiar words.
Dominion of protection, fold against his skin.
Her partner nodded in appreciation, withdrawing his hand, and Lydia looked to Nakane next.
I'm already shielded.
The dark-haired woman raised a hand to display a ring similar to the one her brother had worn, confirming one of Lydia's earlier suspicions. The knowledge sorceress nodded, returning to the hunt. Aladir's breath grew heavier as they walked. After a few minutes, Lydia glanced over her shoulder, finding Nakane assisting the Rethri paladin with walking. In spite of the girl's brusque words, her face was showing a hint of obvious concern. It took several more minutes before the path terminated, and her sorceress sight was not necessary when they found their destination. A hexagon lined with tiny script had been carved into a large gray stone, and atop the stone was a yellow crystal sphere shimmering with inner light.
Dominion essence of poison, Lydia realized, and a very powerful source of it.
The sphere was the size of her fist, which would have been impressive enough for a dominion that was generally in a solid state. The dominion of poison was gaseous, and manipulating that much essence into a solid would be a tremendously difficult process. Nakane brushed past Lydia, examining the tiny lettering.
A summoning ritual,
she said immediately, turning back to Lydia.
And also an exit portal. Is this the end of the glowing region?
Lydia nodded.
I suspected as much. So, someone came here, summoned an entity tied to the Dominion of Poison, and then commanded it to kill my brother. They left a return path through the same location the creature was summoned from.
Nakane's lips tightened, and she turned her head, examining the area. Lydia stepped closer, dismissing her spell and examining the script. The lettering was difficult to read, but it had been scribed by a professional hand. The quality of the lettering wasn't important to the efficacy of the ritual. In fact, the words weren't relevant at all, but words were a useful tool for focusing, and the quality of the lettering could be a useful clue to the culprit.
Visage of Venom, herein lies your prison and your escape. With your essence you are bound. Complete your task and you shall be free.
After a moment of examination, Lydia reached up and adjusted her spectacles.
You could be right, Lady Theus. But nothing here explicitly states that the creature is from the Dominion of Poison. In fact, I doubt it was. Natives of other dominions rarely have access to sorcery aside from the plane they are native to. Whatever was summoned was both powerful enough at poison sorcery to leave a trail, and talented enough at another form of sorcery to remain undetected in your home long enough to poison your brother.
Nakane tightened her jaw.
That's even worse, then. What else could it have been? A powerful Asharin?
Lydia shook her head.
I doubt that. A sorcerer trying to control an Asharin would be very foolish. Asharin adapt to sorcery too quickly.
The ritual circle appeared to be inert, most likely having ceased to function after the summoned creature returned to it.
Interesting that the sorcerer didn't retrieve the Dominion essence. Did he want someone to find it? It could be a signature for an assassin, or something left behind to obfuscate the real trail. Alternatively, the sorcerer may not have had time to retrieve it.
Slowly, the sorceress reached a gloved hand into the ritual area. No defensive measures were triggered by the intrusion, so she picked up the yellow orb. A flicker of blue on her hand indicated the activation of her comprehensive barrier spell, reacting to the foreign essence.
Dominion essence of poison,
the spell reported, confirming her earlier hypothesis.
Dominion of knowledge. Show me the path to the creature who shares essence with this orb.
Nothing happened. Nakane and Aladir looked at her expectantly, but Lydia shook her head.
Nothing. The summoned creature must have moved outside of the range of my tracking spell, perhaps back to its home dominion.
Well, regardless of what the creature was, it isn't the real problem. The summoner is. This is travel sorcery of the highest possible magnitude. It's cross-planar in scale. Not many people could manage that,
Aladir pointed out.
Can you track the summoner with your spell?
Lydia frowned.
No, it doesn't work like that. It only traces connections between essence. Some of the caster's essence would have been in the ritual area while it was active, but there wouldn't be enough left to trace now that it's inert. This sphere shares essence with the summoned creature, not the sorcerer. If we could find the summoned creature, and it still has an active spell effect from the sorcerer, I could potentially trace that. But finding the summoned creature could be as or more difficult. As you said, there are only a limited number of people who could have accomplished this. We should investigate them directly first. Hartigan has the resources for something on this scale.
Nakani raised a finger to her chin.
Or Shalvanar Vorenthal, maybe. Or Eric Taran, if the old coot is even alive. Or...
She turned her head toward Aladir.
Ulandir Tathiriel.
The Rethri paladin returned Nakani's gaze, and then looked away into the distance.
Yes,
he replied.
My father could have done this.
Chapter 3 Talion 1 Cutting In. Blades flashed in the morning light. Talion caught the first two against the edge of his own weapon, knocking them out of the way with a forceful parry, even as he sidestepped to dodge the third incoming sword. There was no time for a riposte, not even a moment to increase his distance. His first attacker's two short swords moved in fluid union, tracing unrelenting lines toward any spot he left vulnerable. His second opponent had a longer blade matching his own, and she skillfully harried him with probing strikes to prevent any counterattacks. It was an unfair fight, exactly the type of fight he preferred. Shift! At his command, his weapon's mass shifted toward the tip, even as he swung it directly toward the female fighter's torso. She parried, just as he had anticipated, but the altered weapon carried a harder impact than she had been prepared for. She fell back a step, not much, but maybe enough. Talion swept his sword in a downward arc at the man with two swords, meeting another parry, but shoving with enough strength to push the shorter blade backward and impact the man's arm. The swordsman grunted, dropping the sword he had been carrying in that hand. A blade swept in front of Talion's face, almost too fast to register. He took a step back reflexively, raising his sword to defend against the follow-through.
"Stop!" instructed a gruff voice. "Rotate!"
Talion sighed, lowering his blade and turning to where Herod was sitting in the otherwise empty stands. The older man sat with his right hand settled near his hip, near where a sword's grip might have once been. In spite of being many years retired, he still sat with his back perfectly straight, his gray hair cropped close to his head, and his beard trimmed short enough to make him look refined rather than aged. His civilian garb never seemed to quite fit his well-muscled form. The metal sorcerer wasn't sure what rank Herod had held as a paladin while he served, but based on the way the other paladins looked at him, Talion assumed it must have once been substantial. While most retired paladins found a civilian occupation or settled down with their families, Herod was omnipresent on the training fields, haunting them like a spirit of the past age. When Herod issued an order, even full paladins were quick to comply.
"Why?"
Talion asked the older man. "I didn't get hit."
"Only because I checked my swing, silly. Wouldn't want to ruin that pretty face of yours."
Velis stepped closer and tapped a gauntleted hand against his helmet, her blue eyes somehow managing to display her smirk even with the rest of her face obscured. Talion batted her hand away playfully, shaking his head. "You never could have gotten that close if I wasn't wearing this stupid helmet. It ruins my peripheral vision." Herod stood up, folding his arms.
"If you want to take idiotic risks on the battlefield, I can't stop you. While you're training, however, I have an obligation to keep your pretty face intact. Now, you did have a pretty good defense there for a while, but you have a tendency to trade hits as soon as you see an opening. That's not acceptable in general, and it's an even worse strategy in a 2-versus-1 scenario."
"Trading hits is fine when one hit from me is like 5 hits from anyone else," Talion mumbled, quiet enough for his sparring partners to hear, but hopefully not loud enough for Herod.
"So you keep telling us."
Velis lifted her sword in one hand, leaning it against her shoulder, and cracked the fingers of her other hand against her armor.
"Let's take that theory to a barrier bout sometime and see if you can back it up."
"He can."
Landon had picked up his second sword and wandered close enough to chat, stretching out the arm that Talion had hit. Their swords were metal, but with blunted edges, and a heavy layer of padding wrapped around the blades for training purposes. Even with the padding, the swords still had the potential for deadly swings, so each of them was wearing a full suit of armor for their practice.
"He beat Meros in the arena, remember?"
Velus scoffed.
"Not quite how I remember it."
"Quit flirting down there, otherwise I'll reset all three of you the hard way," Herod snapped.
Talion glanced at his companions, and the three of them quickly retreated. The other trainees referred to Herod as old as the city walls and twice as strong. While the retired paladin didn't look quite 3,000 years old, Talion had seen enough demonstrations of the man's skill to consider the latter claim to be a possibility. Their starting positions were the three points of a chalk-drawn triangle within a larger circle. It allowed the three to start at equal distances, and the circle represented the full bounds of their fighting area. The current activity was a two-versus-one exercise. A single hit to a non-vital location was treated as a wound to that body part. Thus, Landon had dropped his sword when Talion had managed to tap his arm. A strike to the torso or head was a kill, and the killer would be the target for the next round. Talion raised his sword over his heart, offering Velus the traditional salute of the paladins of Taos. Velus returned his gesture.
"Begin!"
Talion charged, hardly a surprise given his proclivity for utilizing that strategy, but his sword was still weighted toward the blade, and that favored an offensive strategy. Velus took the terrace low blade stance, a low stance designed for defense. A sound strategy against two opponents, but Talion considered it a delaying tactic. The only way to win was to eliminate all opposition. He raised his blade above his head into the Salian slaying form. This would theoretically force Velus to move further to block, since her sword was starting out in a low position. Talion swept his sword toward her head just as he came into range. She ducked the swing, quickly stepping forward and slamming a shoulder into his chest, knocking him backward. Startled, Talion barely raised his arm quickly enough to block the dagger she had drawn with her left hand, and it glanced off his bracer. A hit. He grudgingly released his wounded right hand from his sword, then kicked Velus in the chest and sent her tumbling backward, nearly out of the ring. Before his sword hit the ground, he kicked the hilt back upward, catching it with his left hand. Then something hit Velus in the chest and toppled to the floor. There was a moment of silence.
"A throwing dagger, Landon?"
Velus turned to the other swordsman, who removed his helmet, shrugged, and gave her a sheepish grin.
"Gotta have some way of evening the odds against monsters like you two."
"Monsters?" Talion frowned, shaking his head. "Bah, he didn't mean anything by it." He sheathed his sword, removing his own helmet, brushing a lock of sweat-drenched black hair out of his eyes.
"Water break?" "Only if you can get it on the way to your class," Herod projected from the stands. "You've got 10 minutes until history lessons start."
"Gods, why didn't you warn us?"
Velus complained, removing her own helmet. She was off and sprinting the next moment, and Herod emitted a thunderous belly laugh.
"Guess we'd better follow her," Talion mumbled, taking off into a run. "Don't we always?"
Landon murmured in reply. 8 months had passed since Talion had made the trek to Velthrin. Lydia had set the pair of them up as caravan guards, which had helped Talion replenish his sorely wounded funds. The sorceress had also finally retrieved the meager belongings that Talion had carried when he had been arrested in Orlan, but those didn't amount to much anyway. By the time they had reached the legendary city, the swordsman felt like he had learned its entire history. Lydia practically glowed whenever she talked about her home, regaling him with tales of the city withstanding assaults from the Zixian Empire, the armies of Deasmodin, and numerous other foes. As it turned out, Lydia was a more entertaining way to learn about the city than history class. Unfortunately, she also hadn't covered every detail a prospective paladin of Taos was expected to know. And thus, 3 days a week, Talion Solaris, who had battled false gods and sorcerers in their own domains, sat among children in the mandatory study of Velthrin's past.
And so, when the tides of Vyrek Sul's army pressed close against our gates, Edric Theus deployed a final defense. Can anyone tell me what that defense was?
Talion was pretty certain he knew the answer to that particular question, but he remained seated out of habit. A Rethri teenager a few seats to his left stood first.
"The Calceris barrier, sir,"
the boy said, a slight, nervous stammer in his tone.
"A spell that protects the whole city, powered by three towers built just outside. It's named after his son."
"Very good, Tirith."
The class continued much as many others had, with Talion paying as close of attention as he could to the mostly dry material. Velis and Landon sat nearby, the former writing something, or more likely drawing something, in her journal. At first, he was mildly bothered by her constant displays of wealth, but he eventually discovered that paper just wasn't as rare or expensive in Velthrin as he was used to. He wasn't quite sure why. He suspected some sorcerer had discovered a spell for conjuring paper directly from the plane of nature, but he hadn't had sufficient interest to investigate the issue directly.
"Now, how many of you are planning to take the Trials of Unyielding Steel next week?"
The question snapped Talion out of his wandering thoughts. Landon and Velis stood up, so he did the same. Landon and Velis had arrived in Velthrin a few months after Talion had, the former having come at Lydia's invitation. They were both former members of the Queen's Guard of Orlan, and Lydia had correctly guessed that they would be robbed of their jobs after the coronation of the new king, Byron. The sorceress had explained to Talion that Byron had potentially legitimate concerns that the Queen's Guard might have been compromised by Donovan Taylor, his political enemy, and that they would most likely all be dismissed and replaced. Regardless, Talion had been thrilled when Landon had arrived. The two had developed a fast friendship during their time in Orlan, and Landon was one of the few trainees that could keep up with him. Velis had been a pleasant surprise. A close friend of Landon's from the Queen's Guard, Talion had expected her to be competent in a fight, comparable to the other Queen's Guard he had fought with. She was nearly as tall as Talion, with long blonde hair and an athletic physique. Velis had quickly corrected two of these misconceptions. She was not merely competent in a fight. Their first match had been a near disaster from Talion's perspective, where she had literally thrown him out of the ring when he lowered his guard. After that, he had looked at the young woman in a very different light. Second, she threw herself into combat with a manic joy that he had only seen in one other place, his mirror image. A few other students stood along with them. The first were a pair of Rethri twins, one male and one female, but largely indistinct from one another in appearance due to their voluminous robes. The most obvious difference between the pair was their eyes. The female, Terrace, had burning red eyes, and Lysen's eyes were ice blue. Talion would have guessed them at a couple years his junior by their appearance, but they both had gone through their dominion bonding ritual, which made it near impossible to tell. Finally, the last man stood slowly, not out of apathy, but rather out of what Talion had quickly learned was a form of calculated drama. He stretched his well-muscled arms over his head, yawning lightly enough to border between tiredness and mockery. Talion was well acquainted with pride. He possessed a fair bit of it himself. But Keldon Andis was a merchant of the stuff. The first in generations to possess the gifts of Ain'Darin, Keldon was well known to be a prodigy with a blade and capable of utilizing techniques long relegated to fanciful Tauren tales. He never lowered himself to direct challenges, of course. His displays were almost always against stationary targets, and in front of a large and endearing audience. Keldon was also notable for looking at Talion with nearly palpable detest. It was clear from every glance, every interaction. The reasons why seemed obvious. Keldon seemed to have formed his self-image around being chosen by Ain'Darin himself to be a symbol for their generation. This was probably working wonderfully until Talion arrived at the city gates, wearing the sacred sword of the gods on his hip and accompanied by a returning hero, Lydia Scryer, who sang praises about how Talion had triumphed over a pantheon of false gods. Talion wished Lydia would tone down her rhetoric a bit, but he understood her reasoning. By making him look like a child of the Taos pantheon, she was practically assuring him a quick rise through the ranks, and her prestige would grow along with his. It was a practical strategy, if somewhat distasteful.
Six of you? That's good, because you'll be organized into teams of three once the others arrive, the teacher explained.
He was an older priest of Cytira, his gray beard nearly the length of his cane.
The others? Landon asked.
Oh, yes, you're new. Candidates come from around the continent for the paladin tests. We hold them twice a year here, and only rarely elsewhere.
Talion and the others already knew these tests were their fastest way to join the paladins of Taos. The usual method was joining as a squire, where you would train under an established paladin until you were deemed ready, which typically took years. A final option was the direct request of an officer, which had to be approved by several other officers before it was granted. The last case was rare outside of war, and while Lydia had recently been promoted to lieutenant commander for her exceptional work in Orlan, it would have looked bad if one of her first actions was to request to have Talion entered into the paladins without any training or taking the traditional test. She might have done it if he had pushed, but he didn't like the idea of special treatment. Thus, he would take the tests. Seven reportedly grueling examinations, one corresponding to each of the Taos deities.
The testing period begins in 1 week, the teacher continued. Use that time wisely. I can't advise you about the individual challenges. They change every year. No test will be impossible, and most will offer multiple solutions. Think before you act.
That last bit of advice was bordering on breaking the rules. The tests were notoriously secretive, and veterans were sworn to avoid revealing details about the challenges. Talion knew that with Lydia's practical mind, she probably would have found a way to sneak him information if she thought it would help. But she had never taken the test, having taken the longer road from squire to paladin status. The tests were designed for people like him, men and women who were already adults with combat experience. They would gauge if he had the right mentality to be a paladin, the right amount of knowledge, dedication, and faith.
I better hope 2 out of 3 is good enough.
Chapter 4 Jonan 1 A Little Well-Deserved Vacation. Jonan flicked a finger at the candle next to his simple tavern bed, igniting the wick. It flickered weakly, but anything brighter would have been intolerable for his already vicious headache.
I'm a complete failure at the concept of vacation.
His visit to Velthrin was ostensibly a rare instance of taking leave from his work for the Thorngard. Like all of his previous instances of vacation, this meant that he had been given orders that could not be disseminated through the standard chain of command. His first task had been to deliver the Heartlands to Silk. In the few weeks since then, he had done his best to prepare himself for whatever Ayara's next assignment would be. Today, that had meant a particularly daunting challenge. Socializing. Velthrin was one of the few cities south of Orlan that held a significant and legally recognized Thorngard presence. He had spent most of his day at the local base, drinking and carousing with the soldiers posted there, gathering what little information he could about the local chain of command and any resources he might be able to make use of. The results were somewhat disappointing. Without any kind of official requisition, he wasn't going to be getting much out of the local base. Not even lodgings, even though they had appeared to have ample space. He caught a hint of subtext that the local officers didn't trust him. Frankly, he couldn't blame them. His personnel files were classified at a level where even the local commander probably wouldn't be able to get more than a few lines, a fact that Jonan found both amusing and inconvenient. He wouldn't have trusted himself, either. Fortunately, a scribe didn't need any form of special permission just to get access to the libraries, and he far preferred those to the company of most members of the Thorngard. Now that he knew where they were, he resolved to return to them the next time he could tolerate the presence of people in his vicinity. Seating himself carefully on the bed, the sight sorcerer